makes for a cult classic? Have you ever wondered that? There's no obvious answer. In blockbuster movies, there are known formulas like Spy versus Spy, for instance, or Boy Meets Girl. You may have seen a few at the theater or on your streaming service recently, and they are sure crowd pleasers because they deliver the goods. They stick to a formula that has been proven time and again, and part of the satisfaction is how recognizable they are, how immediately familiar they appear to us. But cult films, in contrast, tend to be curious and offbeat, unlike anything else, and even unlike one another. They are a mystery wrapped in a riddle and usually tied up with some confusion. And yet, they are wholly themselves. People just love them. These cult classics stay with us long after the show is over. We recall distinctive images or lines or theme songs. One of the best loved cult classics in all American cinema offers its audience all three of these. In the decades since its fumbled release in 1980, The Blues Brothers has insinuated itself far into our popular culture. I've had it on my mind a lot lately, and for the life of me, I cannot quite comprehend why it holds as much appeal as it does, not for mass audiences, but for me, personally. If you've seen the movie, you know just how preposterous it is from start to end. It focuses on two outlaws, played by famed comedian Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi of beloved memory. They play two blood brothers, Elwood and Jake, raised in the same Catholic orphanage, headed by a nun the pair simply call the Penguin, since she wears a black and white habit. Their fondest memories of the year spent in the orphanage involve the time they spent with a custodian named Curtis, an African-American man and accomplished blues musician who taught them to play in their youth. In adulthood, though, they both became petty criminals. And the film opens with Elwood picking Jake up from Joliet Prison outside Chicago in a decommissioned police cruiser he purchased secondhand. When you see two outlaws driving around in a cop car on the big screen, you know all kinds of antics are sure to follow, and they do. Visiting the Penguin, Jake and Elwood learn that the Chicago orphanage will soon close unless $5,000 in back taxes are paid. Jake immediately offers to steal the money, but the nun indignantly refuses his offer and tells him he must try to redeem himself instead. Later on, he has a flash of inspiration that what he must really do is reform their old rhythm and blues band with Elwood and use the proceeds from their concert to pay off the tax bill. Elwood becomes convinced of the genius of this plan, and the two set out to get this band back together again. Neither blues brother believes failure is an option, since as Elwood explains to everyone who will listen, we're on a mission from God. Mind you, this is just the premise. I have only just finished explaining to you the setup of this movie, which runs longer than 2 hours. Upon its release, The Blues Brothers was a critical and commercial disappointment. No one understood its narrative logic, and besides, there were too many car chases. Along with the Abbott and Costello type banter between the title characters, there were amazing performances by R&B greats such as Aretha Franklin and Ray Charles. Moviegoers could not be sure if it was a musical comedy, an action film, or a buddy movie. It went well over budget, and by the time the studio was finally ready to release it, the movie seemed destined for early obscurity. We really don't know what to make of projects that defy easy categorization. They make us uncomfortable and perhaps suspicious of their motives because we can never settle in with the material. So are we meant to be kept on our toes? Probably. Let me dispense with a spoiler alert and fast forward through The Blues Brothers in all its magnificent farce and tell you that it ends precisely where it began, in Joliet Prison, where Jake has been sentenced along with Elwood for breaking numerous laws on that epic mission from God. If anything, the Blues Brothers is a special kind of defiant tragicomedy that upends any sentimental notions we might have about what happens to people on a mission, people who are wholeheartedly devoted to it. During their last concert on the outside, standing on the stage with his adoptive brother and reluctantly reunited band, Elwood notices all the law enforcement officers surrounding the audience, waiting for the time to make their overdue arrests. And as Jake starts counting out the beginning beats to a crowd-pleasing musical number, everybody needs somebody to love. Elwood launches into a brief farewell address to their fans. We're so glad so many of you lovely people are here tonight. And please remember, people, Elwood says, that no matter who you are and what you do to live, thrive, and survive, there are still some things that make us all the same. You, me, them, everybody. He nods to the officers. Everybody. Then they dance into song and dance. In this rousing musical number, Jake sings, "Everybody needs somebody to love. I'm not afraid to be by myself, but I just need somebody to love," he croons. "Everybody needs somebody. Everybody needs somebody else." Indeed, everybody does. It is utterly impossible to be missional in isolation. We need people to serve, people to promise things, people to hold us accountable, people to embolden and delight and stretch us beyond our previous capacity and call us out into our best and largest selves. This worshipful hour we spend in the sanctuary each Sunday is called the service. But please be clear, the service is not provided by me, nor by Susie, nor by Michael, or Amanda, or Fernando, or Joan, but by each of you. Every time you come here, every single one of you, you show up for one another. You each need to not be alone, and so you take this time to be of service by gathering and witnessing. In June 2016, UU Wellesley Hills adopted this mission statement. Our mission is to build a community of faith that inspires spiritual growth, just and responsible action, and lives of compassion, purpose, and hope. No doubt you recognize the language. We say a variant of the mission statement each time we light our chalice on Sunday morning in the sanctuary, and each time we light a chalice in the sharp room at the start of a standing committee session. All the employees here read the mission statement at the start of our staff meeting each Tuesday in Rice House. Again and again, we repeat it, because we're all on a mission here, a mission for the greater good. We affirm the unfailing renewal of life, the late British Unitarian minister Leonard Mason wrote. We affirm the steady growth of human companionship. We affirm a continuing hope. What gives us hope, though? We are told by sacred scripture that where faith, hope, and love abide, the greatest of them is love. Love alone will build this community of faith and band it together. When we're truly on a mission from God or the good or whatever name we call it, we understand that much. We, unaccustomed to courage, exiles from delight, live coiled in shells of loneliness, Maya Angelou wrote, until love leaves its high holy temple and comes into our sight and liberates us into life. We are liberated into life by the stubborn power of mission, which calls us out of ourselves and into the fullness of our being. Although I don't generally wear my sunglasses at night, and none of us here are bound for Chicago, there are times here at UU Wellesley Hills when I feel like Elwood Blues, prattling on about mission endlessly to whomever will listen. And what's worse, to people who have already joined this amazing blues band. Ask me about mission during fellowship hour or one of my community chats and then settle in because we'll be there a while. I believe this particular faith community has a unique capacity to inspire lives of compassion, purpose, and hope, so long as we remain clear about our mission. In his book, Letting Go, Transforming Congregations for Ministry, the Reverend Roy Phillips underscores the need for almost continuous creative interchange in these communities of call known as our congregations. He asks liberal churches everywhere to move from a membership paradigm to a ministry paradigm, one driven solely by a shared sense of mission. Understand that mission is distinct from a strategic plan. A series of strategic plans can grow out of a mission statement over a number of years, but they only serve as ways of living out the mission. When we are missional, we recognize that our means, methods, and approaches may change constantly, while our mission remains the same. The mission exists entirely independent of outcomes and only in alignment with our sincerest intentions. A mission is not a guarantee of anything. It is just an opportunity for something. Our mission at UU Wellesley Hills is not to engineer numerical growth in our membership, or to get more families involved in our religious education program, or recruit new musicians to the choir, or spawn new committees as deeply as we might actually care about those things. Our mission is simply to build an inspirational community of hope that invites people into lives of purpose, and all those other things might happen in outgrowth. We must start by remembering, what about this place and these people initially invited us into community and inspired each of us individually? What do you love here? Who do you love here? What gives you the most joy? Give that some thought. Some of you have told me repeatedly, at times insistently, that the blockbuster days of crowd-pleasing church have ended, and our best days are behind us, and that only steady and sure decline in attendance remains ahead, and like a complete fool, I refuse to believe you and remain undeterred. Because say what you will about my harmonica playing, and it is pretty rough. I am here on a mission from God, as nearly as I understand God. Yes, I want to hear you all moan and wail the blues when you need to, but I'm also asking you to remember to jump and shout and dance and bring joy back into this number and this joint. Without that joy and without our love, our mission is over already. Love does not succeed or fail. It doesn't defy these categories. It rejects them outright. It has a curious internal logic. Love persists and endures like the biggest cosmic cult classic there is. One of the best kept secrets of our greatest comedians is this: commit to the bit. If there's a pep talk I give myself most routinely, it is that one: commit to the bit. If you watch the Blues Brothers, you'll see that through every ridiculous twist and turn, those guys are entirely committed to the bit. And whether theirs is a flop or a smash hit, they'll love every minute of it they're afforded, whether they're playing the blues on stage or in jail. Everybody did not love that movie at the outset, only a few did, but they loved it deeply. Fans dressed in sunglasses and showed up to late night screenings and sang along to all the songs and caused others to see what they loved and to suddenly understand why. Over time, the Blues Brothers became the best-selling R&B album in America and one of the top-grossing musicals in Hollywood history, because people know love when they hear it. In my favorite moment in the movie, as he's driving the getaway car, Albert turns to Jake and then leads them in prayer: Our Lady of Blessed Acceleration, don't fail me now. Let that be our prayer, that we always be fueled by the power of mission itself, and let us press onward. Please rise, embody your spirit, and join in singing our last hymn this morning in your teal hymnal, number 10. routine, building a new way.